Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the iSports MSU Red Theater Report, where we like our basketball just like football. I am Tyler Hayward. Red Theater Report is part of iSportsWeb.com. Be sure to check out that website for the latest sports news and opinions. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Red Theater Report to listen to our past shows. Today on the show, special guest host Chris Stanton is going to join me as we push through March. We're going to talk about Davis and Harrison, if they can play consistently enough for one of those, and what the tournament picture looks like for MSU, as they are currently in the fourth spot for the Big Ten tournament. But first, we are going to talk about our reactions from the game last night. Again, if you want to talk Michigan State basketball, or if you need to listen live elsewhere, if you need to leave your laptop or whatever, feel free to call in. It is 619-924-9852, 619-924-9852. Chris Stanton's with us now. Chris, how you doing, man?
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me. Let's talk some Michigan State basketball.
Let's talk some Michigan State basketball. Let's get your initial thoughts about what we saw last night.
Well, at first it was kind of a dicey situation. You can always count on Izzo for some hilarious sound bites at halftime, especially when we're down. But he was right. The seniors needed to step up, and they did. Costello is still kind of a mystery because we saw stories all week about him possibly playing his way into the NBA, him emerging, all of these things. And then last night, him and Deontay Davis were kind of milk carting on us, and that can be kind of scary going into the tournament.
And I mean, you're not going to get, like, the bites at halftime or whatever. You talk about Tom Izzo giving us good sound bites. You're not going to get the John Nels, the coaches are screwing it up for the kids or anything like that. But, I mean, you're right. Costello, I mean, he did kind of step up in the second half. Davis, for being what he is, which is, despite the fact he is projected to be a lottery pick or at least a top 20 pick in the NBA draft, he's a defensive stopper. That's what he is. And even when they came out in the second half, they still looked lost on defense. Costello would come out and he put up a couple points here and there, but he was still getting beat with backdoor cuts.
Well, I think Izzo said it best, that you do have to give Ohio State a little bit of credit. They're young. Their length caused us problems. So possibly getting the ball down to the post was an issue. I know there were several deflections and steals that were accounted for. So you got to give the Buckeyes, the young Buckeyes, a little bit of credit. But as an elite team that I think that we have, we got to be better than that. Thankfully, our shooting bailed us out again. But, you know, what you and I have talked about Michigan basketball from time to time, and we like to comment how they're one-dimensional. If there's a night where our shooting is off, I do worry about us being one-dimensional.
Yeah, you're going to need that presence with Costello. And, well, let's go to the Michigan game a couple weeks ago. Michigan State came out, and they were chucking threes left and right. They were making them. But Tom Izzo, he kind of had that same thought process regarding what you and me have talked about. He doesn't like it. So what's the first thing that he does is he runs two or three sets designed specifically for Costello on the block. So he understands
Correct.
How important it is to not be so one-dimensional about OSU. They are young. They're freakishly athletic. I don't think people realize that their athleticism is what carried them past Kentucky. Their athleticism
Absolutely.
Is what kept games against Virginia close. That's all it is, because it's not Thad Matta's most talented team. This is not Greg Oden and Mike Conley running this system.
Correct. He is still a recruiter, but I do not buy the fact that Thad Matta is an elite-level coach. I think there's something like 1-8 versus the top 50 this year. That Kentucky win was nice, but really, what do they have after that? The win over Michigan doesn't impress me, and I doubt that it'll impress anybody on the selection committee. I got to believe Ohio State is firmly outside the bubble right now.
Right. And, well, you look at the we do the power rankings here at iSports Web, and we kind of mentioned it before the game. Ohio State has not beaten a team in the top half of our power rankings. Now, Michigan was 7 when they did beat them, but ultimately they just swapped spots. And Michigan, as of late, the uncertainty with LeVert playing him in for 10 minutes and then sitting in for the next three games, is making it really hard to gain chemistry, which at this point in the year is something you absolutely have to have, especially when you're riding the bubble, like, well, Wisconsin's starting to get it, but like Ohio State or Michigan.
Yeah, there's some fascinating stuff that's happening down on the bubble, and thank goodness we're not a part of it. Flipping the script a little bit, do you think that we're on that track towards a one seed? Do you think we're a firm two? Where do you think we're at right now, Tyler?
I say right now Michigan State is a two seed. I feel like they can play their way into a one. Ryan and I have kind of talked about it a little bit, but it's one of those situations. Obviously, the conference tournaments are going to shake a lot of things up coming up. You look at Iowa, they've still got a tough schedule ahead of them. Maryland does as well. And so this may pull them behind Michigan State before we even get to tournament play. And I think that that's one of the things that people do overlook is, oh, there's about three games left. Tournament's going to decide who the one seeds are, who the two seeds are, who the three seeds are. But at the same time, you know, Iowa, Maryland, Purdue, Wisconsin, Indiana, they still have some of the tough – they still kind of play each other.
They still play
each other. And so this may pull the reins back on them a little bit, propel Michigan State forward. Iowa goes to the Big Ten Championship and loses to, I don't know, let's say Wisconsin does it, a team that's not going to be able to propel their way into a one seed. I think you've got to favor Michigan State in a situation like that. Obviously, Villanova and Xavier, whoever comes out of that, is going to probably end up with another one seed. You'd have to think Kansas is going to win the Big 12. They'll probably end up with one of them, and then UNC. So it does kind of come down to how the Big 10 really plays itself out, because the ACC up top, they're going to beat each other up still. And it's right now, Michigan State, they've got an easier road until the conference tournament.
Absolutely. We're coming into the best time of year. Our team is the hottest one in the league right now. Things are looking good for us. And I love who that we play in the next couple games. I love who the teams ahead of us play, despite the fact, you know, we're not going to get to a regular season conference title. But Izzo's not really about that. And it's certainly looking good for us.
He's not about that, but he has 7 in 20 years.
Yeah, that is true. And you know, the quick thought about that is, and I'm sure many of your listeners go through the same ups and downs as we do, that, oh, Izzo's playing 12 and 13 guys, what is he doing, or the different things. This is a pattern. Izzo follows this pattern every year, and look what happens. We're playing our hottest ball. We're getting ready for the tournament. Everybody knows it's January, February Izzo, that he's going to own March once again. This team is strong if, and it comes back to what we started the show with, our bigs got to show up. We can't be one-dimensional. We got to be able to own the paint. Deontay Davis, I love his potential, but the man has got to step up.
Well, we may not be able to own the paint, not yet anyways, but this is the highest-scoring team that Tom Izzo's ever had. And via, John Gassaway earlier today, he tweeted out, no team in the last decade has shot three-pointers in major conference play. So the Power Fives, you know, the Pac-12, Big 12, SEC, ACC, team in the last decade has shot threes in major conference play as well as Michigan State has this year. Michigan State is shooting 46%. Ohio State in 2011, 45.2.
Somewhere watching these games, Sean Respert's grinning from ear to ear.
Speaking of which, did you ever get that jersey back you signed him?
No, I have not. I'll keep waiting on that one, though.
Let's turn our attention to Deontay Davis. You did kind of talk about him for a second, how he needs to show up. Aaron Harris last night kind of, I guess you'd say, started Michigan State's offense. But then after that, he
disappeared.
Well, he
does have that going for
him. Yeah, he does have a – his defense has come on strong as of late, but he kind of struggled in the Ohio State game. Deontay Davis as well. They know that Deontay Davis has to start playing outside a little bit more. And I've always been saying all season long that until he learns to guard on the outside, he's not going to play in the NBA because you have to be a stretch four type player, especially at Davis's size. He's not a five. He can't go toe-to-toe with Marc Gasol. So he needs to be able to step outside a little bit, guard on the outside. Excuse me. And he's done a good job. Zach Ervin, you look at the job he did, especially against Nigel Hayes for Wisconsin, who's an all-Big Ten caliber player. He shut him down. Against Ohio State last night, he got exposed, though, once again.
I was just going to say, I thought Izzo said something pretty poignant in his post-conference. I don't want to call it a rant, but certainly he had a point to get across that our bigs were reading their press clippings. And I'm sure Davis is sort of looking out of the corner of his eye, looking at the mock draft stuff. He's hearing from different sources. Until he can go out on the perimeter and shut guys down consistently, he's got to develop some sort of offensive game beyond just throwing it down. His dunks are awesome, but it's got to extend out a little further than that. I certainly hope guys like Draymond Green are having an influence on him, letting him know, hey, this is what the league is going to expect out of you. Certainly he can go sit on someone's bench for the next couple of years and make $4 or $5 million, and that's a heck of a life. But you can't tell me that this young man is ready for the NBA at this point. Another year of seasoning, mix in the four freshmen, maybe five, that we have coming in next year, and we're looking at something special next year in addition to the special team that we have this year. So, it's a consistency thing, I think.
And let's kind of focus on this year. The question I was going to ask, can Davis and Harris play at a consistent enough level to carry this team through March? Because you know, for the most part, what you're going to get from Matt Cassell. You know what you're going to get from Bryn Forbes. You know what you're going to get from Denzel Valentine. Play at a more consistent level. Can they do it?
Oh, absolutely. That's going to be the difference between a Sweet 16, another Final Four, and ultimately a national championship. It's going to be all pieces working together. It's going to be those guys. It's going to be Gavin Schilling not fouling and playing as a force inside, which we're starting to get a little glimpse of, just a little bit. It's Marvin Clark doing what he did last year in the tournament. It's all the pieces working together. And as far as Aaron Harris, it's feast or famine. His athleticism is unreal. I have a chance to see quite a few games in person up at Breslin, and the dunk that he had in the Iowa game, you would have thought the foundation of the Breslin Center was going to cave in. I mean, people recognize his athleticism. He's unbelievable at times, but he's also unbelievable at times with just errant passes, silly IQ plays. So certainly he's going to have to find it.
Right, and when you look at him, I've been saying, if you put Valentine's brain with Harris's body, you've got a top five pick.
Absolutely.
I don't think there's any question, because the knock on Valentine is maybe he's not as athletic as you would like for an NBA player. Where have you heard that before, Draymond Green? And that he is a little bit shaky on the defensive end. And so this brings me to my next question. Can Valentine continue to do what he does, carry the load on offense, get all the rebounds, score the points, facilitate the entire offense, and play, I would say, the best perimeter defense on the team outside of Tum Tum Nairn? Can he continue to do all that while he's playing 38 minutes a game?
Well, you just said your answer right there. Tum Tum Nairn Jr. Getting him back, having him lead the offense. I think sometimes our fellow Spartan fans lose what Tum Tum's role is. Tom Nichern is not going to score 20 points a game. He is not Bryn Forbes. He's not Denzel Valentine. But he's the game manager. And Spartan fans should know the term game manager.
He's not even Denzel Washington, and he got game.
Right, exactly. You know, he does not need to be Jesus Shuttlesworth here. He needs to lead the team, not make mistakes, get guys the ball. You know, on the football side, everyone knows the names Brian Hoyer, Kirk Cousins, and they've made a pretty good career out of being game managers in their sport. Well, when it comes to the basketball side of things, Tum Tum's play and his ability to shoulder the load, get the offense in the spot where it needs to be to free up guys like Denzel who can play a little more aggressively on the defensive end, that's going to make all the difference.
Right, and I think it's one of those situations where Valentine can do it eventually, though it is going to wear on him. How many shots do you think he took last night?
I don't have it in front of me. How many?
Well, that's why I'm asking you to guess. I mean, it's a game. That's what we're doing here.
Go ahead.
I'm still waiting on your guess, dude. Come on. You're killing me.
$1, Bob? I'm going to say, are we talking total attempts?
Total attempts.
22.
He took 13. How many of those
really?
Do you think were in the second half? How many were in the second half?
Of the 13, I would say probably 9.
4. He only took
four
shots in the second half. Tom Izzo said in his post-game press conference that Valentine, he may be doing too much, that Izzo playing him 38 minutes a game is probably tiring him out. He said that he may be tired a little bit before the game even started. He only took 4 shots in the second half. He went 2 for 4, Forbes 7 of 8, Costello 4 for 5.
Yeah, I knew the Forbes 7 of 8 bit, and obviously you want to get the hot guy, the Rock, and they did. And we started to get some runouts too. Our secondary break, getting the ball to the wing, having Costello run to the rim. Ohio State was beat down a little bit. And you have to remember, Thad Matta doesn't like to play a lot of guys. And certainly not having his big gun in the lineup last night hurt. I think we were able to wear him down. And, you know, him not Denzel not taking a lot of shots, I could definitely see that because we had other options.
But now you have to start questioning if Izzo's saying that it's because he's getting worn down, because he's playing him too many minutes. In a lot of the closer games, because this counts as a closer game, Michigan State didn't pull away until there was between 7 and 5 minutes left. Valentine has been playing about 38 minutes a game. He cannot, in my opinion, he cannot continue to do this, especially when, the Big Ten tournament starts rolling around. You cannot play him 38 minutes, 3 straight nights, and expect to have him back for, let's say, Thursday, the first game of the tournament for MSU. Like, he's not going to be 100%.
His legs
are going to be dead.
Correct. Tom's minutes per game are going to have to go up a little bit. We're obviously going to have to stay out of foul trouble. Last night's officiating was not terribly suspect, but Michigan State shot a limited number of free throws. How many free throws do you think they shot last night?
Oh, now you're putting me on the spot.
That's right. Turnabout's fair play.
Let me see. If I had to guess, I would say about 7.
You
I
looked that up. It was 7.
Yeah,
Michigan State
I've
shot 5 of 7 from the line. You know, and conversely, Ohio State was 19 for 21. So we could banter about the poor officiating in the conference, which is absolutely true, but I think it relates to our point that we opened with, is the fact that we are a little one-dimensional at times, not attacking the rim, and a jump-shooting team is not going to go to the line a whole lot. So when we establish Costello and Davis, we get to the line, those guys are able to sink those. Now we're looking at something that can compete with the one seeds of the world. Certainly a couple things to clean up, whether it be Valentine's minutes or us getting to the rim. We trust in Izzo. I mean, this is his time. He'll get it done, even though sometimes he boggles our mind. He knows what he's doing, and we got to give him that slack.
Let's talk about the play of Bryn Forbes, because Bryn Forbes, and I said this last night, it reminded me of watching Reggie Miller versus Rip Hamilton. If you go back to those Eastern Conference Finals between the Pacers and the Pistons, he's sitting there, he's trying to guard his man who's running off. At times, I have seen 5 or 6 screens. Ohio State was pretty much running them in circles around screens. And then on the other end, obviously, that's how Forbes gets his open looks, is off of screens. He does a great job leading his man into them. And it was just unbelievable to watch when people say he's a pure shooter, which, I mean, I guess I kind of get, but it's not like he gets open because of the screens. He uses the screens to get himself open, I guess would be a
Absolutely.
Way to, if that makes any sense.
Well, a lot of credit needs to be given here. A lot of credit to Izzo and Fife and Stevens and the staff for running these sets, because essentially they tired out Ohio State. The amount of energy that the Buckeyes had to spend on defense, that's part of this equation that we're not factoring in. The other part of it is, and you hit the nail on the head, it was very Reggie Miller-like. The fact that Bryn was able to use the screens, there was some good screens set, whether Dan Dockage thinks so or not. Schilling does a nice job setting screens. Forbes was getting squared up. It's fun to watch Michigan State off the ball. It's fun to watch guys like Forbes use the screen and cut and get sets. Certainly getting those puppies squared up and the onions will fall. Bryn Forbes is his off-the-ball play. I challenge anybody who watches Michigan State, look off the ball, because you're going to see some pretty amazing stuff.
Oh, absolutely. And you said they wore out Ohio State's defense. Ohio State, they're only giving up 66 points per game. And they were sort of on pace, given the fact Michigan State does have one of the more high-powered offenses in the country. At halftime, it was 36, but then all of a sudden, Michigan State scores 15 more points than what Ohio State's been giving up. And
absolutely. Mark Loving
at the end, they scored 45 points in the second half.
And that reaps the benefit on two ends. Mark Loving is an outstanding shooter. However, if he has tired legs from having to chase some of our players all over the place, that's going to reap benefits with his shot being missed. And Izzo even alluded to that in the post game that Ohio State just frankly missed shots. Well, that's because we wore them down.
Kind of Michigan State's way of going about things, if you will. They've gotten off to a slow first half start. If you want to look at the Indiana game, you want to look at the Purdue game, if you want to look at a game last night against Ohio State, they've been slow first half starts, but then in the second half, it seems like a different team comes out every time. You're a coach. How do you rectify something like that?
Well, you got to stick to your game plan. Certainly, I felt like we were lost last night in the first half. We didn't run our sets to the point where we should have. We kind of let the tempo be dictated a little bit by Ohio State in the first half. Certainly, they were playing with a lot of emotion. They had just lost their best player to injury. They were looking at a must-win situation. That's a hostile environment. I've been to the Schottenstein Center. That place can get pretty loud. But our seniors came through. They needed to step up. Izzo mentioned last night the need for them to coach on the floor, and you can see it. You can see it from Forbes. You can definitely see it from Valentine and Costello as well. And I think he's molding Davis into a better player. Playing with Costello has helped Davis. So it's that leadership component, and it's the IQ of our team. You know, not everybody on our team has a high basketball IQ, but trust in Izzo, he's getting them there, and the seniors are too.
All right, we've got about 5 minutes left here. Let's talk about Michigan State's outlook, because last night they did themselves a giant favor. They have Penn State and Rutgers now. However, a slip-up against Ohio State, if Wisconsin's able to win out, and all of a sudden Michigan State's not looking at that double bye. We kind of talked about the tournament outlook a little bit earlier. What do you think Michigan State needs to do to get that one seed? I already said what they need to do, but what do you think they need to do?
Well, Penn State will be no gimme. You can ask Iowa that. Ohio State, it's hard to look past them, but it is senior day. You and I will get a chance to see that firsthand. I don't see Michigan State losing at home to the team that we clubbed last night on senior day. From that point, if we continue to stay hot and we tweak a couple things here and there, I honestly don't see anybody in this conference beating us. Peter Jok has played out of his mind this year for Iowa as a team. You know, Fran McCaffrey is a strange dude. He's kind of fun to watch sometimes with his temper tantrums. But they're trending downward, and they've got a little bit of a rough sled to finish the season. I fully expect us to see Michigan State cutting down the nets in Indianapolis and waiting for their seed on Selection Sunday.
I mean, I think it's safe to say if they do end up cutting down the nets, they're one seed regardless of what happens. They're probably, again, regardless of what happens, I'm not 100% sure of the picture right now. They're probably a one seed in the Midwest region, which I think everybody knows is pivotal. I mean, you go back to the championship run. Tom Izzo did not leave Ohio, Indiana, and Michigan. Like, they stayed right at home the entire time. And so I think that that's that would be a huge win for Michigan State. Ultimately, that Ohio State game, just because of their athleticism, it still does scare me a little bit. Say what you want about last night. But they'll have a couple of games without Jay Sean Tate. They might be getting into a rhythm without him, as hard as that is to do, since he is the heart and soul of that team. So I think that it does present a little bit of a problem. And it's just going to be interesting to see how Thad Matta handles the rotation, considering the fact Ohio State's not that deep of a team anyways.
It'll be interesting, too, to see what changes Thad makes. You know, I kind of threw him under the bus for some of his coaching decisions, but I wonder if they make some adjustments for that last game. Maybe go a little bit more zone. Michigan State, as we know, will struggle from time to time with zone. However, if they sag too much, we'll light them up. So they got to pick their poison. If we can get past their length and we can tire them out once again, I think we're in good shape.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like I said, the athleticism will keep them in it, but the problem is now their endurance, as they lost a key rotational part. I guess you couldn't even say rotational. He's a star player on that team. And if Ohio State does end up going to zone, and I don't want to look past Penn State or Rutgers, but we will do our standard preview shows about those games. But last night's still fresh in our mind, but we know what Ohio State looks like. I think if we do see a little bit more of that zone, which Matta has ran from time to time, I think you see a little more tum-tum, because for whatever reason, Michigan State has struggled getting the ball to the top of the key where they normally like it at the – or around the free throw line where they normally like it in the zones, and tum-tum's been the only one who's been penetrating the zones at all.
Tum-tum will attack the gaps, which creates bigger gaps and will help our shooters. As long as we continue to attack the rim, certainly against the zone, you're not going to get all the way to the rim, but you're going to create those gaps, ball movement. There's where you sit Deontay Davis down on the short corner and to the block, get him the ball, and it's Dunk City.
All right, man, that does it for us today. That's all the time that we have. Hey, Chris, thanks for filling in.
It was a blast. Thanks for having me.
For Chris Stanton, I'm Tyler Hayward. This was the iSports MSU Red Theater Report.